Okay, great. Good evening. Welcome to the Oceano Community Services District Board of Directors meeting this fine October 12th, 2016. Celia, may I ask for a roll call vote, please? Roll call. Thanks.
Director Angelo?
Here.
Director Blackburn?
Here.
Director Garrow?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Lucy?
Here. Thank you. Karen, can I ask you for a flag salute?
Attention, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. At this time, we're going to review the agenda. Is there any changes anybody would like to make tonight?
Madam President, Ms. Cassiola has a change.
Yes, ma'am.
In regards to the cash disbursement section, we revised the staff report and we removed the item that was included in 7B that had its own line item, 7C, in regards to the IRS refund we received and they would like for us to return. And then we also added two warrants that we received after the agenda was published on last Friday.
Okay.
And so two items are added.
But there still is the IRS payment,
yes,
correct?
Yes, but it has its own item, so we removed it from item 7B and had its own on 7C.
I get it.
Yes.
So would it be safe to say that we could take this packet right here,
yes,
and just swap it out, right? Okay, thank you.
Maybe the two items that you added, can you quickly describe,
yes,
those?
One is for the termite extermination for the sheriff's office.
Okay.
We have to pay 50% deposit to get that moving. And then the other is for trash removal that took place on the in between 22nd and Warren Street, that alleyway,
yes,
that had been growing. So we had that removed and bagged.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So does anybody want to make a motion to accept those changes?
I'll move to accept the agenda as modified.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Passes. 5-0. Okay, at this time we're going to have public comment for items that are not on the agenda. Items that are not on the agenda. It sounds so strange when you say it. Ms. Tacker.
Good evening, I'm Julie Tacker, and there's a rumor that it's going to rain. So following up on some comments I made 2 weeks ago at your board meeting, my concerns about the Oceano Drainage Improvement Project that the county is shepherding through your community, you know, you might remember that that project was slated to be $2 million. The project price has grown to $3.7 million, and that's before you move your utilities at your cost. And Mr. Ogren mentioned that some preliminary numbers that he saw on your side of the ledger are on the order of about $125,000, and that he was pleasantly surprised, or that's my characterization of it. What I asked that evening was how much was being charged off in administration of these moving the utilities. You've got hired an engineer to design the move. Mr. Ogren spends his time on it. Mr. Minnery spends his time on it. Mr. Minnery has a warrant tonight of over $2,000 of his time on that project. Mr. Ogren, you know, makes $16,000 a month. I'm curious how much of that is charged off on the project. What I also wasn't sure of until just this week was how many other utilities were involved. And Southern California Gas, PG&E, Charter Communication, and the South County Sanitation District all need to move utilities in order to take this project forward. And so if you add up the cost to all those other entities, this project is going over $4 million, maybe $4.5 million. Some of the funding source is CDBG funds. Those are community development block grant monies. I believe $600,000 could go a long way in Oceano, if not for that project. That's where that money's going to go, is to the drainage project. You have some serious needs in this community that I think the money could go further and get a better bang for that buck. A few months ago, a tree fell in that little grove down there. It was apparent that there's root rot, and it's lucky that no one was injured by the falling tree. But the project identifies, I think it is 6 trees for removal. And before it rains, I think those trees should be removed, and it could actually mitigate some of the drainage issues ahead of time. And I would ask that your board support removing the trees.
Thank you, Ms. Tucker. I'm sure that Mr. Ogren, I'm not going to speak for Mr. Ogren, but I'm sure he is keeping a close tally on how much is spent administratively. He's actually very good at that as well. So that question can be answered. As far as moving of the other utilities, I think that would probably be a question for the Department of Public Works with the county. We wouldn't have any jurisdiction over that. And I do agree with your comments on the danger of those trees falling in particularly that area that chronically floods. So let's hope we get enough rain to uproot a tree. But I think that your questions are valid. Thank you. Is there anybody else you'd like to speak on public comment at this time for items that are not on the agenda? Okay, hearing none, we're going to close public comment and go on to staff reports. Mr. Maricino.
Good evening, board. Tony Maricino. All right. For the past couple weeks, since we last spoke, we had 2 call-outs. One was in, we had a line break behind the grocery store over there on Highway 1, Central Market. It was on the customer's side, so we isolated it for them to get it repaired. The other one was the lift station went down Saturday on the 1st at 4:40. There was a power outage that side of Oceano. That lasted for about 2.5 hours. Talked to PG&E about it, and old equipment, it failed. We also had another power outage this morning at the lift station down at the beach. Didn't have an explanation why, but that lasted for about 45 minutes. The staff did an excellent job, lift station up and running, no problems. All right, so the work orders, we had 10 work orders, 7 USAs, 7 customer service calls, pothole railroad some more to understand what the sewer line is doing. We installed a new service line on 19th and Paso, which is, it's nice to see more development happening in Oceano, because you got curb, gutter, and sidewalk on 19th and Paso. The wraps all the way around. They'll be paving that shortly. Continued sewer jetting, cleaned out the lift station, installed a few meters, also had installed a 1.5-inch meter on beach. We had a flow test, HOA's, old Avocado HOA's irrigation. This is an ongoing effort to resolve an issue that we brought forward here shortly. It was a high consumption. We're getting the meter tested by the manufacturer. So there'll be more information to come about that in the future. I did some maintenance at the old fire station. Water and sewer testing at the Avocado development. A lot of the sewer lines are going in, a lot of the infrastructure, the water mains. So I've been working with them to get everything from pressure tested to mandrels going through it to make sure everything's installed correctly. CHC is starting this week with the infrastructure of our water main. We'll be shutting down a section of our water main so they can tie in to upgrade for that 8-inch main. So there's, it's nice seeing more and more projects going on, helping with the infrastructure and just improving Oceano in general. And then as for state water deliveries year to date, we're at 524 acre feet. We've pumped just over 3 acre feet. Lopez is currently at 23.5%, which is 11,608 acre feet. And we had zero SSOs, sewer system overflows, for the month of September. Any questions?
Wow.
So.
Go ahead, Matt.
No, thank you, Tony.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Tony, what's the largest line you've ever put in? 8-inch, that sounds so big for, you know, us 1-inch residential people. So what is the largest line that you've ever had to put in? You said CHC is putting an 8-inch line in.
Yes,
right?
They are. Giving you an example, the biggest water lines we have in Oceano are 12-inch. Mm. Any new development puts in an 8-inch due to the fact fire protection, fire hydrants require a 6-inch going to them. So you want a line bigger feeding that 6-inch line going to that hydrant. So everything new is 8-inch.
Great. And you attend the TAC meetings as well, correct?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. And so how are our neighbors faring with the drought?
That's a good question. There's a lot of talk about it. So
is there any action?
It's going to be a continuing effort.
Yeah.
They got some things they got to resolve.
For sure.
And figure out.
Okay.
But as for Oceano, we're looking great.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Thanks,
thank you.
Tony.
Thank you, Tony.
Jennifer, do you have any questions? Lori? Okay. Thanks, Tony. Okay. Karen, do you want to give a brief fire report?
I don't have any statistics, but there was a small fire down at the beach, and we responded and handed it over. It was a fire. It looked like it was at a homeless camp down by Pier Avenue, somewhere there.
Okay.
And Cal Fire came, and we turned it over to them and let them finish putting out the fire, but we started putting out the fire.
And Madam President,
yes.
I just wanted to mention that Chief Lieberman with Five Cities Fire Authority sent us a flyer. We have them out front, and we'll put it on the website as well, that Five Cities Fire, in coordination with the City of Atascadero, City of Arroyo Grande, County of San Luis Obispo, is providing free flu shots. And it's going to be Sunday, October 23rd, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And that's at the Women's Club of Arroyo Grande, 211 Vernon Street in Arroyo Grande. And I'll just repeat that real quickly. It's Sunday, October 23rd, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., 211 Vernon Street, Arroyo Grande, at the Women's Club of Arroyo Grande.
Great. Thank you, Paul.
And we probably should explain that's a training program for disaster.
I did not see on the flyer, but that's good to know.
It's probably not there, but it's kind of a dry run for, I mean, if we needed to inoculate everybody in San Luis County for smallpox or for some epidemic, and this just is kind of a training program for that.
Oh,
at the same time, providing free.
Very
I think
good.
It's great.
Is this being sponsored by the local area, or is Red Cross involved or anything like that?
I think it's the county health department.
Okay.
Okay, so line up and learn how to save the neighbor's life.
I have one today.
Well.
Okay. Yeah, it's a good idea. And you'll announce that again through the meeting, maybe at the end, just to remind
sure.
people.
Sure.
Yeah.
Glad to.
Okay. Paul Boat, Zone 3.
No update on Zone 3. As Tony had mentioned, the Technical Advisory Committee is looking at a lot of drought-related options, the treatment plant, as well as some of the items that we'll cover during the agenda today. With respect to the Oceano Drainage Improvement Project, I think one of the points that I want to emphasize there is, of course, that's a project by the county. And so our obligation to do utility relocations exists to the extent that we're in the county roads or in the state highway, and if they have prior rights. So out of the 9 sites that require utility relocations, the county is actually liable on 4 of them. Because our utilities were in the road before the county accepted the road into the maintenance system. So four of them, we've come to the conclusion that they're liable for. Five of them, we've come to the conclusion that we are liable for. County Council, a representative, provided Mr. Minnery with case laws on the point. And so that's all been concluded. Mr. Minnery also provided quite an extensive edits to the interagency agreement that the county provided, and we have not yet seen that in return. Design-related issues have been completed by our district engineer, Doug Grosshart. And with respect to my pleasantly surprised, it's not with respect to the total cost that we're facing. And we will have those numbers at the appropriate time when it's placed on the board's agenda. But it's with respect to the value engineering that Mr. Grosshart did in taking the county's preliminary design. Tony went out, did some potholing so we could identify exactly where some of the lines were. And through that value engineering approach, I believe that our cost estimate is going to go down about $30,000. So that's what I was pleasantly surprised about, not the total cost. And I am hoping that that will be on the November agenda. It's getting close. And I want to turn it over to Ms. Cassiola. She's been in discussions with the district auditor.
So I spoke with Caliber Tuesday about where they stood, and they had posted our GASB 68 journal entry that we had had a meeting over, and now they are just going into their final review of the financials, and they should be published by the next board meeting.
Well, very good.
Thank you. All right. And do you want to talk about termites at the fire station? Or, I mean, we can't
sure.
Speak about, you know.
Yes. Safety, so the county informed us that they did an inspection probably about 3 to 4 weeks ago.
September 14th.
September 14th. So that's closer to 4 weeks ago. They got a quote. Clearly, our responsibility as a landlord. So Carrie got another quote, which is lower, and we're proceeding with the work.
That was part of the second warrant that we received later Friday. So
they got one quote, and then you said, oh, yeah. Well, we can do better.
Yeah. We went with Bresden.
How nice of them to spend their money.
So they're going to tent it and do the whole thing?
Sure. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, tent the whole building.
Is this fire department or sheriff's department?
Sheriff's
building.
I thought Mary said fire department.
Oh, I probably did.
That's okay. I just was like, because I knew about the sheriff's. I thought, oh, is there another one? Well, Oceano has a lot of termites. This area is known.
I know. We have to be quiet so that they don't migrate from the sheriff's over the fire department in advance. You know, it's got to be a surprise.
Okay. So there must be some wood in that building somewhere.
Oh, of course.
Because I just thought it was cinder block and steel. But
I didn't look at the inspection report, but yeah.
But I believe it. I'm sure it does have torrential termites. Okay. So, all right. So, Director Angelo.
I wasn't here last week, so I don't have anything new to report.
Nothing at all? Is the beach still there?
Oh, yeah, the beach is still there. It was beautiful today. Yeah. I'm hoping it doesn't rain because we have a lot of people coming Saturday. Only if it sprinkles, it'll be fine.
Yeah. My plants are praying for a downpour. Jennifer, you had a busy, nice, busy week.
I actually have no meetings to report on.
Come on.
Break this time.
I thought we did something dacky. I thought we did something dacky, no? Okay. All right. Matt, you didn't do nothing, right?
I guess not. No, I don't have any meetings to report. Thank you.
Okay. And then Karen?
Yeah, I attended tech, but I think between Tony's report and the report that Paavo has scheduled, it will be pretty well covered. I also went to a nice little luncheon at the Central Coast Senior Center. They just completed landscaping and really, really fixed up the parking lot. And, you know, that's a really super building. And there's a lot of programs down there that I don't think are being utilized as much as people could. I think anybody wanted to find out about the various programs. I know there's a lunch program. We had a nice barbecue. that the Roy Grande Kiwanis Club put on. And if people wanted to know about it, I believe the phone number is 481-7886, and they have bingo, and they have art classes, and they have music, and they had a couple of seniors entertaining us with some really good songs, and it was very, very enjoyable, and it's a really nice place down there. So
it's fantastic. What's the address on that, Karen?
For those 1580 Railroad Street, in Oceano.
Excellent.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Did I give the right phone number? Yeah, I did. Anyway.
And they have a liberal definition of senior if you want to actually join. I think you only have to be 50.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and I think they have fitness classes, too.
That is just not cool.
I'm a member. I am a member now, and I'm proud.
I'm on the better side of that. That is not cool.
I actually attended the Water Resource Advisory Committee, RAC, one of my favorite committees, and listened to a woman who is a geophysicist. And she talked to us about the different ways of characterization of a basin. And she gave an example of when they had outlined the basin in Monterey Bay when there was saltwater intrusion, which I guess there still is, and had determined what had caused the saltwater and the characterization methods that they had used to determine where there was high salt concentrations, where there was low, and really how do the two intrude, you know, upon each other. And it was amazingly fascinating. There, from my understanding, there are three different ways that they can do these characterizations. This one was kind of like an MRI that they did off Monterey Bay. Her name is Rose Marie Knight, and I'm pretty sure she's at Cal State, but you could probably type her in. She is published, Stanford. NASA had funded the project from San Luis Valley, which is right between Colorado and New Mexico. And it's heavily agriculture land, and they only have one source, really, of water, which is their basin. And so they've invested quite a bit into knowing the characterization of it. And they used more of a magnetic field on that one, where a helicopter with the big ring that created this magnetic field kind of flew over and was able to capture the outline of that basin and where it was low and where it was high. And so I would suggest people go to her website and look at the papers. It was pretty fascinating. I was very interested in it also. The findings for Monterey, though, was the fields were too close to the shore, and they had cross-contaminated through the ground. So it could be something as properly placing your fields to be able to try to slow down the impacts of salt water. She also spoke a little bit about how some basins, not a lot, but some who have been able to capture the intrusion were able to reverse the effects. And so people got a little excited. But then when she explained that it's very few basins, usually the damage is too far gone to replace it or to reverse it. So then everybody calmed down. So, but it was really a very good talk. And if you ever see her name anywhere, I would suggest trying to stop in on her workshops and stuff. And then I attended the wonderful South County Sanitation meeting. The agenda was very light, but it's very hard to get any work done right now. There's high legal fees coming back in. There's a threat of litigation on the table. I don't know if it's coming or going at this point, but it's there. So that's pretty much what changes the dynamics of moving that agenda forward, is those underlining problems that the organization is going through. So I'm not going to say too much more on that. So those are the meetings that I attended this last week. So at this time, we'll open it up for public comment for anybody who wants to present on, question or add to 6A or B. Now's the time to do it. Ms. Tacker?
Julie Tacker again, and I attended the South County Sanitation District meeting, and I think besides the issues you brought up, your board should know that the district entered into a contract with Bartle Wells to pursue a state revolving fund loan and or some other funding, because the state revolving fund appears to be tapped out right now, and perhaps the redundancy project will have trouble getting funded. The other thing that Mr. Huebner talked about was a change order to the grit removal project, where they'd reached high groundwater and a Baker tank had to come in. There was some talk about the trailer and the permitting, and that there wasn't permitting. And then he also said that he was in communication with the Wallace Group, looking at permit history for past projects on the site that had not been permitted. There's some uncertainty whether or not the grit removal project needed permitting. And so, I have an opinion about how some of these projects got done in the past without going to the Coastal Commission. And maybe now we're going to find out why Coastal was ignored all these years. But what could happen, and this is my own speculation, is that the Coastal Commission is going to require after-the-fact permitting of those projects. And so this is Wallace collateral damage that the sanitation district will have to fund. And it, again, goes on the ledger side for Mr. Wallace.
Thank you, Ms. Tucker. At this time, we'll move on to consent agenda items. This is where we look at the minutes, past minutes, and cash disbursements. So, Cassie, you want to speak to this?
Yes, 7C.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
So we received and deposited a refund from the IRS back in July for an overpayment related to our 941 form for quarter four of 2015. The form 941 is the employer's quarterly federal tax return that reports the amount of tax withheld during each quarter. The second notice we received also included on October 3rd showed the overpayment and refund issued to us was in fact incorrect, and they requested for us to return the refund. And we are to return it by October 24th to avoid interest and penalties. And I have discussed with the IRS over the phone and confirmed that the original form 941 we turned in 2015 was correct, and no refund was necessary, so we need to return it. But they did ask if I had the check still, and I told them no, we cashed it in July.
I'll admit, when I read the first part of it, I was like, somebody's getting a call. And it was you.
So it's come here, go away, come here. It's a come here, go away.
Yeah,
come
yeah,
here.
It was, yeah.
So they gave us a check, now they want it back.
Yeah.
Tell them that the check is being audited at this moment, and we'll keep you posted
the IRS
in 90 days.
The IRS is taking their ball and going home.
Okay. And then you had two items that were added to the warrants, correct?
The termites. And then the trash removal in that alleyway. Good.
And it was just that one alley, right?
Just that one alley, yeah.
Have we got the total amount from Waste Management yet on the big pickup?
We've received a report.
We're going to cover that during agenda item 8A when Cody's okay. doing his...
So I'll hold that thought.
And I had a question on the minutes. Was it Chris Dacey or Chris Lacey? I thought his name was Dacey, like Mike Dacey. But remember the gentleman? This was yes. the gentleman that spoke about it. We appreciated the help with the lateral.
Basin?
The one that used the...
Okay. All right.
I think it is.
I never actually spoke to him, but I thought he said Dacey. Okay. Right. My mistake. Okay. Thank you, Tony, for the clarification.
Does anybody else have any questions on these items?
No.
No? Okay. I'm going to open it up for public comment for items that are under consent agenda. Hearing none, I'll close public comment at this time.
I move to approve as modified.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Matt, seconded by Karen. Let's do a roll call vote on this one.
Director Garo?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes. 5-0 passes. Thank you. All right. Moving quickly along. Who's next?
8A.
Yes.
Yes, next up is Mr. Grable, a consideration of a status presentation on solid waste management efforts and policy direction as your board deems appropriate, which means that we don't have any specific policy recommendations right now. It's an update. Cody's going to go through some of the research that he's been doing and some of the thoughts that we've been formulating.
And he wants to follow you with this document or not? Or
yeah, it's going to be there.
Okay, very good.
So, Madam President, members of the board, my name is Cody Grable. I'm the solid waste coordinator. So, good evening, and I'm going to start off by going over some of the current solid waste programs that exist through South County Sanitary Services, and then I'm going to discuss new potential programs the OCSD could implement. And the new programs are really going to rely on two themes. We're trying to address illegal dumping to reduce the occurrence of illegal dumping and also to create incentives to help support a cleaner community. So these are some of the current programs that are available through South County Sanitary Services. We have bulk item removal, curbside oil pickup, free extra monthly recycle, and a biannual cleanup week. So the bulk item program is really nice because you don't have to go to the dump. Basically, you put your item to the curb and it gets picked up. You just have to schedule a meeting with South County Sanitary, super convenient. And then curbside oil is another great program because, again, they'll remove the oil from your house, South County Sanitary. You just have to schedule the appointment.
And what kind of container do they want that in?
So they actually provide you with a container. They have okay. a specific plastic container. And you just schedule through South County Sanitary to get the container.
Okay.
Thanks for asking a question, President Lucy, because you should feel free to do so during the presentation, everybody, rather than just waiting to the end.
Oh, well, okay.
And what's the charge for oil pickup?
I believe that's free. I think that we all pay for the containers
okay.
Just somewhere in the service agreements, but I believe it's free.
Yeah, on bulk item pickup?
So bulk item pickup, it's $10 per item for large appliances. So like if you have an old washing machine, a refrigerator, and then $15 for mattresses. But there also is a recycle program for mattresses. And if you have a newer mattress, then sometimes if it qualifies, it can be free.
And then because it's normally not cleanup week, there's also an additional like pickup charge or transportation charge?
Right. So then there's a $11 fee. It's about $11, $12 to get through the dump gate. So it ends up being about $26 to $30, depending on the item. And then there's also an extra monthly recycle. And the way this program works is once a month, you can put up to the equivalent volume of your recycle container, a bagged recycle, next to the recycle to get picked up. So it's really nice if you have family or a party where you have a bunch of recycle. So The final program I'm going to talk about is Cleanup Week, and we just had a really successful Cleanup Week. We had about 6 times the amount of residents use the program from April to September. I believe I got some stats here. We got a report today from South County Sanitary, and it looks like in April we had 77 residents use the program, and in September we had 464. Ooh. So public outreach, we really stepped up public outreach. We did everything English, Spanish. We sent postcards to every home. We did an email blast, sent out a flyer to advertise, and also obviously covering costs was really big. So we saw a huge increase, which is awesome for the cleanup week.
I have a question about the extra recycle.
Okay.
Is that on a specific day of, or week of the month, or do you have to schedule that one?
So that one, it sounds like, I don't think they're too strict on, basically. Okay. I mean, I'm sure if you're
every week
trash day, they'll say something, but okay. You don't have to formally schedule.
Okay, thank you.
Our franchise agreement states that a property owner can do it once a month, but they also, they're pretty flexible on the actual requirements. Okay.
They're flexible on the recycle one?
They're pretty flexible, actually, on all the services, so...
They will still charge you for the large items, though.
They charge you, but that's okay.
But not for oil. They will not.
Not for oil, and not for the extra recycling pickup. So they'll do the extra recycling pickup once a month by the franchise agreement. And you know, if somebody happens to have something where it's been 3 weeks and they have another event or something, that's where generally they're pretty flexible. They're not going to go out there every other week or every third week, you know, frequently, but. The franchise agreement provides for extra pickup once a month, but on these type of programs, again, they've generally been pretty flexible.
So you can get 5 recyclings a month?
No, once a month, it's you can just put a lot more out there. Normally, we're limited throughout the county to the bin.
Okay, now I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, so once a month...
Every week is... But once a month, you can put more than just the bin.
Right.
And if you follow Cody's example, he just got out of college, so he had a party.
Yeah. Well, you see.
And there was...
Cans are worth money, though, you know, if you recycle them. That's
I thought he was recycling all his homework, Matt.
That beer still came in bottles.
Yeah. Only the good stuff.
So, yeah, now I'm going to...
In terms of the costs to the district... normally it's about $1,500 or in the recent past, this event was about $14,000. So we have about a $6,000 credit every year for free services, which means that at the next board meeting, we're going to have a invoice that we got to pay to South County Sanitary Services. And were you going to cover, Cody, a couple of things that we're going to do in following up on that with our customers?
Yeah, so now that we have a fully detailed report, we're going to do a quick survey. We're going to go through and select about 50 residents that use the program, and we're going to get information about what items that they had picked up and also how they heard about the program. So we're going to get more information there, kind of just do a follow-up to check the invoice that was sent, because... it's a lot of information, the Excel sheet, if you can imagine, 464 separate entries. So we're going to do some follow-up. It's a lot easier to search an Excel sheet, so there's some good functions there we can run through and just cross our I's, dot our T's, or
yes,
opposite. So that would be the last step.
Yeah, and so the confirmation with the customers is going to serve two different purposes. One is it's a little audit of the bill that we're going to get from South County Sanitary. It's appropriate. Certainly, we all drove around the night before, and we saw a large volume, so it didn't surprise us. But also the customer survey portion of it to find out how well our outreach efforts worked. And then for springtime, I would still like to repeat the program again. We can't... you know, obviously afford that level of a program, you know, every single semi-annual cleanup week. What's going to be interesting is that in spring, if the board authorizes it again, are we going to still have that high level, or is it going to drop down because of, you know, the level of success of the program this fall? If the program stays at that high level, then we'll probably have to develop some subsequent recommendations to have a cutoff after so many people call in. You know, maybe it's the first 100 people that call in, or we'd have to develop some criteria.
I still think it's a very positive thing that we did for health and safety, community service, and just a good policy matter. Decision. I think it's a very positive thing that we did, and that maybe if we only did it once a year in the fall, this might have been the precedent for it, but that we pay for it. But
I think it was really successful, and in driving around the night before, I happened to go down a block where a senior petite lady probably finished putting her 18th bag out there or whatever. It was a big, and it was, you could tell it was the final one because she was like, done, going back in. But yeah, there was a number of properties where clearly they disposed of a lot of material, and it's, yeah, I thought it was very successful.
I think that's great.
And it was well publicized too. I saw a lot of windows where people had taken the flyer and taped it up and stuff. But I wanted to ask you about your evaluation, because I'm one of those people who believe in evaluating your work so you can see the pros and cons of it. And I just have a slight concern that because so many people are being bombarded with election stuff, there's people knocking on the doors all the time now. You know, are you registered? You know, just I've had probably 5 or 6 people knocking on my door lately, and so keep that in mind as you do your evaluation, that they're not going to be so willing to talk as much, but and you have candidates going door to door, you know, so there is a lot of activity, and timing's just, you know, it is what it is. Just the Constitution has to happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's the contact information for South County Sanitary Services. They have a pretty nice website, too, worth checking out. So now I'm going to transfer into the potential new programs that I've been developing. So there's 4 programs. There's the smartphone app, Adopt an Alley, Neighborhood Cleanup, and Adopt a Can. And there's some common themes that I've already mentioned. We're looking to increase community involvement and also create more positive incentives. So an app I'm going to, the first program I'm going to discuss is the smartphone app. So Ready 311, they're the ones that create this app, and that's a screenshot of the front screen you would see. There's an 8-cent fee per resident, so it's $600 annually. And the reason why we think the app would fit nicely in Oceano is because it will increase community involvement very highly. It's a free app that anyone can download. And we kind of have an analogy with graffiti. It's very similar. Solid waste violations, specifically illegal dumping, the sooner you get on the issue, the better. Mm-hmm. Because if people don't, if they see trash in alleyways, then they think, oh, what's one more item really going to do? So the sooner that we can get people to send us information, the sooner we can respond, and the less of an issue illegal dumping becomes. And we have came up with a decent incentive idea, and the idea would be to have periodic drawings. So when people send in information, we could request an email or phone number, and with that we could try to have local businesses sponsor free gift cards for like a burger or a burrito, mm-hmm. something like that, and we think it would be a nice incentive. So
what they would do is just call or text.
Yeah,
I'll
go into the details right now. Yeah, so these are all screenshots of the app, and basically you download the app and you can select an issue, which is on the left side of the screen, so we can create as many issues as we want. So basically someone would click on report illegal dumping, and then they would have to drop their location, so they'd have to be physically in Oceano. And then from there we can create questions, so is this on public property, is this in the private property, and from there a map, the bottom right, is what we would see with our municipal login. And we can click on the pins, and that would pop up the ticket item, which is what they call basically the, on the far left, like report illegal dumping. It would pop up a ticket. And from there, we could assign a employee to then communicate directly through text message with the person that sent the request. So we can tell them, oh, this is actually on private property, we can't deal with this, or we're sending out somebody right now, and by the end of the day, it should be completed. So it just really increases the ability to communicate and swiftly respond to solid waste issues.
And so even though one of the examples is potholes up there and we don't do potholes, we could have an option if there's somebody who is like wasting water and you want and they had water running down the street, we could put one up there for water wasters?
Yeah, we could do like a broken pipe. So if somebody saw like there's a big leak in the public, or like there's also emergency alerts if someone hits a power line, if there's a fire. It's just, I mean, people probably call 911, but it really just increases the ability to communicate.
So now, say for example, the pothole, which is a function of the county.
Right.
So by hitting pothole, you know, I wanted to complain about 4th Street or something like that. Would it directly tie me into the county?
So it wouldn't. Basically, what would happen is they would drop their location, but then I could tie a question, a dialogue box that would say, or just a statement that would basically explain pothole issues are under the county's jurisdiction. And then from there, they could still report it. But through really simple programming, you can put in any question you want. So it can either be a yes, no, or a dialogue box.
So it could have the county's phone number.
Yeah, we could direct them. But if the county doesn't pay for the program, the app, then it won't send anything over to them. But we could totally put in a note. So for pop.
Makes you wonder whether or not we can get it, work some sort of an arrangement with the county where maybe that can get that particular item can get fed over to the county rather than us, but.
Yeah, that would definitely.
Oh, and then on the drawings or the incentive program stuff, especially because apps are going to be the youth of our communities tend to be really into smartphones and everything, and they're out there playing and everything else like that. If the drawings could maybe, you know, help motivate the kids and the youth in order to be engaged in the importance of their community and cleanup and yeah.
Alrighty, so yeah, the next program I'm going to talk about is Adopt an Alley. So basically, I was fortunate enough to get a lot of research from Adopt an Alley from other programs. There is a whole lot of information, which you can see. The bottom right program is the city of Tempe. They have an Adopt an Alley program. The top right, which is a little blurry, is in Springfield, Missouri. They have a Rally in the Alley program. And then we basically are piggybacking off Caltrans with Adopt a Highway. And then locally, Sloan County has Adopt a Road. And there's also Adopt a Park. So there's a lot of information that I was able to use to create guidelines. And the whole idea here is the more eyes we have in the alleyway, the better. We really think that people target alleyways because there just really aren't a lot of people watching them. And the program focus is going to be throughout Oceana. We're not going to limit where an alley can be adopted, but the areas that I would really like to see focused on are displayed in this map here. And basically what's going on is the dotted circle you see is from the revitalization project. That was what was defined. And then the highlighted alleys are where I'm constantly responding to illegal dumping. So we think that the place that needs the most work immediately is inside that circle in the alleyways. So it's basically from Paso to Highway 1, and then that's 13th Street to 22nd. So that's the main area where if people are open to suggestions, we'd like to see the immediate implementation.
Well, let me suggest also that I think the area on the island near the sanitation plant where we have, there's a lot of transient activities, I think that the illegal dumping and is a serious issue there as well.
John Carter's going to update
John
us on
agrees,
that.
John agrees, yeah. So,
after.
Yeah. So anyway, I do think that that could be an additional focus because it's such a nice area that's being
dumped in. So yeah, these are the program requirements that the volunteers would be expected to follow, and I really based it off other programs like Springfield, Missouri was using in the city of Tempe. So the idea is that there would be a safety leader that the volunteer group would promote. They would run a safety meeting they would have to pass. They would have to provide liability waivers, and then they would be able to act. And then the CSD has some requirements as well. So we'd have to provide the paperwork, so the safety information, the liabilities, typical work permit for the area they've decided to adopt. We could provide safety vests, gloves, bags, and then one important thing that would really incentivize the program is to provide a roll-off dumpster. So South County Sanitary has these options, and basically we need to ensure that they have a cover so people can't be coming and throwing hazardous materials in them, which isn't an issue. They have locked tops. And then we need to ensure that we have an employee that's just monitoring to make sure oil and household hazardous wastes aren't getting put into the roll-off. So when all those steps are completed and the alley work has been done, we would provide them with a sign, something along those lines that would say Oceano Citizen of the Year or something that would promote the organization. So really similar to an Adopt a Highway sign. So that would kind of be the incentive there.
And so Adopt a Highway is, they have their businesses on those signs. Or so would the alley be similar to that?
Yeah, it could be. Like if Chacho's or Sylvester's or someone.
Or family name.
Yeah, or volunteer groups. We can't really promote a message from what I understand, but as long as they're not like outwardly spreading a message, it wouldn't be an issue.
And so I think the important point here is that Cody has done a lot of work on terms of looking at other agencies and what do they have in program guidelines, and that his work effort now and over the next several weeks is going to be taking that, getting those distilled into a format for Oceano CSD, working with me, and then we'll, of course, be coordinated with legal counsel as well.
My understanding is that the high school kids have to do a certain number of community work service hours, and there might be a way of connecting with maybe some clubs at the high school to say, look, we're going to have a work day on whatever particular Saturday. Come down and, you know, bring 10 of your students, and they'll each get 5 hours of community work service or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, there's definitely potential for community service.
And I think that might be an interesting way to, you know, somebody, if somebody sponsored, they'll, they, you know, just, like, I'll provide pizzas if you bring me 10 students. And really doing quite
bang
a bit of work.
Well, yeah, in this particular example here of alleyway work and partnering with Five Cities Fire Authority that Cody is going to mention is another good example of something we might do with community service hours.
Yeah, so this is a safety issue, and basically access for fire trucks can become a little bit hairy when there's a bunch of weeds that are growing into the alleyway. So this is Pier Avenue. It sounds like there just recently was a fire there. So we really need to ensure that we can get in and out quickly if there's a fire or emergency response. So weed abatement is another thing we can tie into the Adopt an Alley.
Yeah, and under the also the umbrella of green waste management, since, you know, recycling, green waste, solid waste are all within, you know, our authorities. And the thing that, you know, doing some green waste management to make sure that we have fire access through here might also then help motivate some of the property owners on, you know, their own management of shrubbery or whatnot.
Yeah, so the next program is the neighborhood cleanup, and this has been actually catalyzed by a lot of the citizens themselves, which is nice. So we're really trying to keep the ball rolling there. It's another opportunity to get involved in the community, community service hours, volunteering, like you had mentioned, pretty great opportunity. And that's the photo, that back, the last photo was on Honolulu Court. There was a homeless encampment that, security court. So the citizens came together and they cleaned everything out, and it's super awesome. So, and let's see here. So again, we're really just looking for more community involvement, volunteer hours. So it's just another opportunity. And the program focus, we're not going to be restrictive. Any neighborhood could implement the program. Again, I've kind of created a study area that I would like to see implementation occur at. So the dotted circle is the revitalization area once again. And then those stars are just individual isolated incidents of illegal dumping. So it kind of just will help reduce illegal dumping and also contribute to the revitalization plan. So
I had a question on the, you were talking about the potential of getting a roll-off dumpster or something. What about regular supplies like trash bags and things like that would be necessary? Hand tools?
So we would provide, I was thinking, safety vests, mm-hmm. trash bags, gloves, anything else really that would be helpful. I think we should definitely.
Maybe if we had some of those like garden carts, you know, those ones that you can pull, they could fill them up and drag them back to the trash can.
Yeah,
or something.
Definitely.
Just a thought out loud.
Yeah, the more materials, the better, I think. So yeah, again, this is very similar to the Adopt the Alleyway program requirements. So we would have some sort of safety leader that would run a meeting with the volunteers, ensure that everyone understands the safety requirements, have a liability disclaimer signed off, and then action could be taken. And then, again, really similar, we would have to, the CSD would have to create the paperwork side, provide a work permit, the safety materials like we just talked about, vests, gloves, bags, all that stuff, and then again, provide the roll-off container and ensure that it's locked and that we have someone monitoring to make sure hazardous materials aren't getting combined. So those are the requirements. And the last program I'm going to talk about is Adopt a Can. And so I'm going to get into the why first of the Adopt a Can. And the idea, again, is that we're just going to get more eyes on resources in Oceano. So the idea here is that we're going to create an incentive to advertise on the can itself. So we're going to create a cost-sharing agreement, and whichever community group or organization decides to pay X dollars will get their logo on the trash can. And because their name is on it, the idea is they're going to now have a new level of respect for that can, and if they see it overflowing or someone's broken into it, etc., they'll call us immediately and we can deal with those issues, because a lot of times people will just start stuffing trash into cans and it will overflow, and for over a week at a time trash will just be spilling everywhere. So there's the idea with the incentives. And now we're going to get to the focus area. So there's basically two areas. We have 14 cans in Oceano. The left side is the lagoon area, and the right side is basically the core of Oceano. It's Beach Street, Highway 1, and then up by the elementary school. So that's the focus area for the program. And basically, I've been, over my employment, slowly creating different gradients of options. I've considered cost, I've considered style, I've considered design elements, shipping, weight, and the volume of the cans, and I've came down to three options. So this is option A, and it's through Windsor Barrel. Morro Bay actually just used this model to replace their cans, and they've had a lot of positive things to say. So this would be more in the core part of Oceano, in front of storefronts, things like that. And it's nice because it adds recycle. Option B is a little bit fancier of a model. It's significantly more expensive, but you can see there's a planner on top. You can have a cigarette tube on the left side to dispose of the cigarettes. These are handmade in Cambria. They use them to replace their receptacles. So this would be the second option that would really add curb appeal to your business. And then the last option would be over by the lagoon area. So it's much more durable, because over by the lagoon you have a little bit more extreme weather conditions with the ocean, and there's a lot more people coming and going. So we have a lot more trash, and we need bigger containers.
And then, Cody, you had mentioned that on this particular one, it doesn't meet the design requirements, so we'd probably want to do two side-by-sides, one for recycling and one trash.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have to have a side door, because the trash company doesn't really want to have to lift trash out. And for this two-in-one option, they don't have a side door. They're not willing to customize them, so we'd have to buy two separate containers. That would be the strategy there.
But those do have a side door?
So the individual ones do. Okay. So we'd have just like, we'd have to get a trash and recycle sign and just have them side by side. And then, yeah, this is the value matrix that I've been using to run through all the different models. So you can see the individual cost, and the total cost reflects if we replace all 14 cans with option A, B, or C. The durability is just on really a scale of weight and what material is used. The design requirements were met through what the trash company requires, and then the volume, you can see different sizes. That's reflecting the actual trash container itself.
Can you state those? I can't see the numbers from here.
Okay, so for option A, which was Windsor Barrel, that's going to be 1313, so it's 1,300 $13 per item. For option B, which is the Cambria model, it's $2,550 per item. And for option C, which is over by the lagoon, it's going to be $791.95 per item.
So the ugliest one is cheapest.
Yeah, pretty much. That's kind of.
Is the option C?
I never knew
for
trash cans were so expensive.
No, so for option C, we would have to. Right, so that's why the price is. It goes up significantly because we're going to have to buy 28 cans. Okay. So it's. There's definitely a cost.
$800 a piece.
Yeah.
I get those $12 plastic ones at the store.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely more expensive than I was expecting, but they do have a pretty long lifetime. Just the major issues, we don't offer recycling, so for the clean side of Oceano, the green program.
And the lifespan on these, are they 20-year cans?
They say 20 or more years. I mean, it's hard to say, but
right.
They're designed for 20 or more years.
The option C is designed for 20 years, right?
Pretty much every option, they say, should last you at least 20 years.
Did you look, San Luis Obispo has those metal ones and with the recycling on top. Any idea what those cost?
Not off the top of my head, I couldn't say.
But those also are, I think they've been bolted to the concrete. There's some installation expense.
So, Cody, you actually worked with a couple other people on staff to review more alternatives and then came down to these three, right?
Yeah, so I did contact San Luis, and they had used the same model that I believe Grover Beach just implemented, and they had a lot of problems with vandalism. They say those metal slats apparently are really easy to break into. So it's really the thought is what's going to be the most durable material, and with people breaking into trash receptacles, how can we reduce that? So that was what I recall from that model.
So, you know, in terms of that durability and that option C, which is obviously heavier duty, our thoughts are in like the lagoon area where there are going to be a bigger risk to vandalism with going with that style. The nicer looking cans, more in the business areas where they're going to have somebody who's actually watching over them a little bit more closely. But where we're wanting to sort of open discussions a little bit or get a little bit of feedback is on this idea of usually in a program like this, if a business wants to sponsor something, they're going to pay something. And maybe it's just the advertising. Maybe if we offer the option A and they want to go with the option B, then they pay the higher costs and they maintain the little plants on the top. But, you know, there's really a lot of discretion for the board, and obviously this decision is going to come down in subsequent months. But
I think we should be consistent. If we choose A or B for the downtown area, we should choose A or B.
Okay.
That's my thought.
Yeah, but I agree with the lagoon.
Yeah.
Since there's so, right. You know what it gets like on Sunday.
Right.
I mean, the RVs are lined up, and they're dumping their trailers out right there on the sidewalk. You know, they don't care if the can's full or not. They just take it and throw it down.
So that's the big thing is if someone has their, you know, their logo of their business on it, they're not going to want to see stuff just falling out of it all
that's
the
right.
time. So
I would go for that area. Unfortunately, I'd go with the ugly because it's a bigger can. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's the volume's 90 gallons, even though I like the other ones better. I think for the downtown area, though, option A would look nice.
Well, and we can go and talk to businesses to find out if they're interested, if there's one style that's more interested. The other thought was, would your board want us to talk with the Oceano Advisory Committee because they've been involved in some of the design elements, like
sure.
the one Caltrans. So
sure.
we could do that as well.
I think that's appropriate. I like the work. I like the vision that you brought to this, Cody. I really do.
Thanks.
You can be in front of my house.
Yeah.
I'll keep the planet.
It's a nice looking trash receptacle for sure.
Yeah, I'd like to see that one around the lagoon, really.
I think she should get a trash can. I got a fire hydrant in my lawn, so I think she should get a fire.
I'll trade the fire hydrant I have.
Your mailboxes?
I'll pay for one of the item C's down there for sure. As long as he moved that damn fire hydrant.
That's what we should put there instead of the fire hydrant.
Yeah. At least if I knock that over, I can pick it up.
You should put one of those buggy whip flags on it so people can see it. So
I put so many flags and reflectors on that thing, and they still run over it.
Alrighty, yeah, so just wrapping up, basically. So we went over the current programs that we're still trying to promote through South County Sanitary, and we've discussed potential new programs that the OCSD can incorporate. So the next steps are going to be moving forward with draft policy development and then considering bringing the OAC on board for style, design, feature suggestions for the CAN. So that's where we're at.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to do a little change in the agenda. I'm going to have John Carter give an update on the island, and then I'll open it up for public comment. Is that okay with everybody?
Yeah.
You're the press.
John, how about you do an update on the island because it's tied in with this project?
Yes. Okay. Good evening. My name is John Carter. I live at 1778 Aloha Place, right on the corner of a security court in Aloha. Joe and I have been working together, and we've been working with the sanitation facility and other entities in the area, and this is actually a positive story, but it does have a dark side, and I wouldn't be here unless I'm trying to correct the dark side. So probably go to the first slide, Pablo. Okay, the area that we're concerned about is there's a footbridge, and Cody had a picture of it in the previous slot in his presentation, and what I'm speaking to here is that footbridge, all roads lead to the footbridge in the area. Lakeside leads to Aloha Court, Aloha, which leads to the footbridge. Pier Street leads to Lakeside, which leads to the footbridge. And that, after we had in the spring, in April of this year, when we got some water in there and the homeless and mostly vagrants were camping in the area there and not leaving, they got a little bit of standing water in there. And some of them left, but a lot of them didn't. So when the water receded in April, we went in there and we had somewhat of an ad hoc community cleanup day. And it was quite effective. And all that activity occurred right at the footbridge. Well, when the water finally receded and the area became habitable again, we had more and more people moving into that area. Okay, and that's when myself and Joe and OCSD and some other entities around here took some action. Next slide, please. So here are some of the things that are happening in the area there. You know, and myself and Joe distinguish between vagrants and the homeless. There's a lot of homeless. Well, I wouldn't say a lot. There are some homeless and a lot of vagrants out there. The vagrants are into drugs, alcohol, a lot of illegal activities. They use the Willows area as a refuge at night. They migrate back out into Oceano and the Grover City communities during the day. You know, and that includes their activities of pilfering and prostitution and other illegal activities. So what we have is we have vagrants going to that footbridge and transiting into the footbridge, across the footbridge, into the footpath. Now, we've been successful in cleaning up the areas on the sanitation facility property and the county property, which is north of the North Levee. We've been fairly successful in that. We still get trash from people that will overnight there and leave their trash there. We go in there and we take that out, and we put it on security court. And whether we put it on our own trash bins or when it gets accumulates to a level where we can't deal with it, the sanitation facility, you know, comes out with their labor and some of their vehicles and hauls it away as well. So there's been a lot of cooperation there. The other thing is we get a lot of traffic right in that area. Not only do you get the traffic from the folks that are on the bicycles and pushing little hand carts and pushing buggies and, you know, and pushing shopping carts and pulling wagons, you know, and it's a two-way deal. In the morning, they're usually taking stuff out, which they can sell or recycle, okay? In the evening, they're bringing in supplies and they're bringing in, you know, food, which very little of that information gets brought back out. So it gets left there and it has to be, you know, recovered. And then we have vehicles. I think that's where a lot of the illegal activities are happening. Vehicles start showing up around 8 or 9 at night, and they come and go through most of the night. And in the morning, it levels off a little bit. People will stop, go in there for 30 minutes, and come back out. I have no idea what they're doing. So those are some of the key issues that are persisting here, but I think we have a solution to it. Next slide, please. The Sheriff's Department has been, you know, very responsive to a lot of calls that they've received. And you can see a couple of cars right there. There again, they're parking there for a few moments, maybe an hour, and they've been dropping off supplies to people too. So I think there's homeless families in there, and then there's the vagrants. And I think some of these, they're supplying these people with food, water, clothing, shelter to some extent. There's been hand tools. Joe saw they actually had a chainsaw that they gave to some guys and they took back into the area. Now, they weren't chainsawing anything in their own county.
Pardon? Use the microphone.
Oh, they weren't using those gardening tools and stuff like that in the areas that we've already cleaned out. They're down into the flood control channel now, and they're south of the flood control channel. So they're on state parks property now. Okay, so next slide, please. Okay, the sign that I believe the county put in front of the footbridge there, and on the levee where you have access from the north levee, they put that sign there. And what that sign did is that gave legal authority to the sheriffs to come in there and question these people and, you know, interrogate them and find out if they were wanted or not, and told them they're going to have to leave. And then they'd come back and check. So that was very effective. Now, next slide, please. Okay, this is the cleanup day. You can see that OCSD provided that large roll-off trash bin to collect all the information or collect all that trash. Okay, so again, cooperation, and then there's the sanitation facility providing their equipment out there. And this has been going on since April of this year. Next slide, please. Okay, and this is another example of the sheriff's office being out there and looking at where the tents are. You can see it's a well-concealed area, thick canopy of willows, and this is for these vagrants. And another, the vagrants with the trash and the stuff that they bring in is difficult to imagine unless you've been out there looking at it and picking it up and cleaning through it. It's everything. There's hazardous waste out there. There's It was incredible to me. There was probably 200 pounds of uneaten canned food in various cans in those areas. Just big trash bins full of uneaten food. So they're not hungry. So, but again, the sheriff's support there has been good. Next slide. Okay, so what I think would be a good first move here, and I've got the endorsement from the sanitation meeting, the board there, is that if we could put some type of a 6-foot to 8-foot chain link fence there and manage access to that area, make it a lock gate, and I believe, you know, keys could certainly be held by OCSD, sanitation facility, state parks, fire department, and anybody else who would need access to that area, because periodically you do need access to that area. Myself and Joe and some of the community would need access in there to go in there to continue to clean out trash that accumulates from people that overnight there. But it would certainly reduce the traffic in and out of that area. And I think it would force the homeless and the vagrants to go further up the flood control channel. Now, that's good in that it gets them away from the area where they're concentrated in now. But now they're transiting from state parks property to county property. State parks have different levels of authority. Okay, they can go in and they can give these guys 24 hours notice and say, I'm going to come back. If you're still here, we're going to arrest you, or we're going to force you to leave, and we're going to stay here till you leave. You can't do that on the county side, from what I understand. So there's some issues there. And so that's the temporary solution we have. And maybe if we could do it for 6 months, get it cleaned up, we could unlock the gate, and then people could have free access to it. Then if it got bad again, we could manage it. But it's more of a management challenge right now than it is anything that you would say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to lock it, and we're going to forget about it. You can't do that. You know, it's too close to the too many natural habitats back in that area.
Great, John.
So that's all I have. But the other thing that I would endorse with Cody and Pablo and the rest of you folks have put together, that's a good first step. But we're going to need more of it across all communities.
Yeah.
As time goes on. because this waste issue is not going away.
Thank you, sir. We really do appreciate all your
Mayor,
efforts.
I'd like to make a comment, too.
Yes.
I have my business on Pier Avenue, and I have seen an overabundance of drug dealing going on right there where the state parks are watching. Pay no attention. The same people every day come in at certain hours. The vehicle comes in, drops stuff off, and I walked over and said, do you see what's going on? No, we didn't. I don't know what you're talking about. I see it's getting more and more. It's increasing. The little fire they had recently behind that area was also, they weren't sure how it got started, but very similar from before. Luckily, they got on it fast enough and there wasn't any problem. But I'm having a lot of problems with people down there breaking into my area where I've got fenced and I've had to reinforce it. I'm waiting for some new fencing. I'm still waiting on that for it to show up. But I'm seeing a big increase on drug deals right out there in plain sight. And the sheriff comes through two or three times a day. I don't know if they've got it timed when they think they're going to be there, but first thing in the morning, they're coming out of the bushes and they're headed down the street, down Strand, and then also down the pier. And this is happening every day, every night, and in the afternoon as well. So they're all processing and heading down towards the lagoon or back behind us in the area that's burnt recently.
That's all state parks area, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah,
and it's been becoming a problem because now I have to be careful what I'm even putting out front of my house. And I'm seriously thinking about getting alarmed.
John, can you use the microphone?
So, actually, I think I'm going to close this off for discussion right now and call for public comment on this topic. And then could I ask that somehow we get this back on the agenda to either support or get a staff recommendation on the fence? Just a minute, John.
Sure.
Okay,
yes.
Thanks. Okay, we're going to open it up for public comment. So did you want to?
I just wanted to add one thing.
Sure.
I've talked to Supervisor Compton about this, and she endorses it as well. So I have an assignment, and I've already talked with a sanitation facility. We put together a couple mock-ups of what we think the gate would look like. I have an assignment to get back to Lynn on that.
Right.
So if Lynn calls, at least you guys know about what's going on and where we're going with this. That was my purpose here this evening.
And, Madam President, I hesitated for a second because this item's on your agenda tonight. So
can we take action on it?
And the thing is that, you know, our authority, of course, is in the Waste Management Authority. But to the extent that we want to cooperate with other agencies and that there are options out there for other agencies to take that will then reduce the amount of waste that we're incurring, this is just a broad, you know, policy type of direction meeting. And
okay, so if it's on the agenda and we can take action supporting it under staff's recommendations, I think we should roll with it then.
Yeah, I think that the idea is general policy direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't want to drill into specific projects and say support this project.
Right.
But the general policy direction that in order to help promote waste management within the community, that staff is directed to work with the other agencies on, you know, the different types of options. And, you know, so general type of direction would be appropriate here.
All right. So, but I'm going to go back to public comment.
Yes.
Okay. So at this time, we'll open it up for public comment for anybody who wants to speak on this item.
Ms. Julie Tacker, and I was going to just speak to the aesthetics of the different options of the trash cans.
Okay.
And I do hope you send it to the advisory council. I think when at the same time your community is talking about revitalization, and I know how important the light standards are and the history behind those, I'd like to see you kind of marry the aesthetics with something that looks a little more like the light standard. You may then branch out when you're making recommendations for the revitalization that your park bench also kind of is. They all have a similar theme. So, but, you know,
okay,
doesn't matter.
Well, it does.
Okay. But I'd like to see the advisory council weigh in.
I agree. Thank you, Ms. Tucker. Is there anybody else who'd like to speak? Okay, I'm going to close public comment, and I'll entertain a motion.
So I think that the motion would be to receive the report from Cody regarding the efforts and give staff direction to continue forward with that. As far as the information from Mr. Carter, I think that we should take a position that we support continued efforts towards cleaning up the area around the island security court, and direct staff to communicate with the supervisor's office, Supervisor Compton's office, and to continue those efforts.
Can I ask, add a friendly amendment to that after?
Of course you can.
I guess it would take a second.
Second.
Would it take a second?
Yeah, no, we can discuss.
Okay.
You got it.
You got it.
I think also, too, is they're looking for support for to install a fence right. for security purposes.
Right.
And I think that that's what's being asked of us tonight, too. So not only Cody's stuff, but John is also asking for us to support.
My concern
and about my interpretation of Mr. Director Guerrero's motion would be that we would then coordinate with the other agencies.
Correct.
Again, our focus is on the waste management side of it.
Right.
But
so.
And of course, the concern that I have, which is why we're directing staff to operate this way, is that we don't end up interfering with a coastal access issue and end up in a lawsuit that we're not trying to get into. But of course, the health and safety of our community and Mr. Carter's property rights and quiet enjoyment of his property are paramount here. So,
motion captured that. I just want to
make intended
sure
it to,
captured
yes.
the...
Yeah.
That was the intent of it.
Yes, the intent of the second.
Okay. Let's do a roll call vote, Celia.
Director Guerrero?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes. That passes 5-0. Can I ask that we do a 3-minute break real quick, if people don't mind, and then we'll be ready for water?
It's your gavel.
Okay. Thank you. We'll meet back at 3 till. Brought this back into session. Okay, Mr. Ogren, it's your
item 8B.
It's your turn again. Thank you, Corey, for all that. That was really great.
It's magnum opus here.
All right.
So, agenda item 8B, consideration of a memorandum on water resource policy issues and approval of policy direction that your board deems appropriate. I was going to go page by page.
Sure.
No, I'm not. I'm going to very summary comments.
You're going to read the entire thing.
I had to read it twice.
The PowerPoint that I have was actually produced by WSC Consultants and is focused on reclamation only, which is one of the six topics. But that I wanted to make sure to cover reclamation and a good status report on that because the sustainability of our groundwater supply is, you know, very important for the Five Cities area. And so on the other topics, I'm going to provide some summary comments and then just stop on each one in case there's questions of your board. In the staff report, I made sure, or in the very front of the memorandum, made sure to recognize some of the community conservation efforts because Oceano has been doing very well in terms of the conservation efforts. I also identified a number of the accomplishments that the district has achieved over the last few years. There's an exhibit on that as well, but I was not going to get into those details in my discussion. The single largest item in the memorandum, and let me back up. Part of the reason for producing the memorandum is recognizing that there's going to be a transition in your board. And that way, the individuals who are seeking election will have a document on which to do some homework in the case that they get elected so that once they are seated, that we're ready to move forward with any of the water resource actions that might be coming in front of them. Some of the topics that we're going to discuss are going to probably be in front of the board earlier in 2017. Other topics may not be. But in any case, I wanted to make sure to try to put together a relatively comprehensive document just to help for a smoother transition in the elected, in your, you know, the board. So on the State Water Emergency Agreement, which is the single most biggest item within the report, the basic concept is that the county is pursuing the development of a state water emergency program because the county's allocation in state water is 25,000 acre feet per year. The local delivery commitments is less than 5,000 acre feet per year. And even when we count all the drought buffer that everybody has purchased, there's still approximately 15,000 acre feet per year of what is termed county's excess allocation. So the basic idea of...
Mr. Ogren, can I stop you for one
yes.
moment? Can someone please close that door?
So, you know, the idea that there is water that the county has and could make available to other agencies during drought emergencies is an important regional effort. But there's a lot of questions associated with that. And in the big picture, really those questions are of two natures. One is, what is the legal authority, what is the legal role that the state water subcontractors, including Oceano, have in the development of that program? Because as I identify, there's a few provisions, and obviously I've reviewed the report and worked on it with legal counsel, but there's some provisions in our existing contracts that would argue that the county needs to get all of the subcontractors to approve some, at least some of the details associated with the emergency program. So there's the question there of what are the subcontractors, what's their legal role or contractual rights. And so part of the purpose of creating this report is sharing it with the other state water subcontractors, have shared it with all the Zone 3 subcontractors. I sent it out to the county and to help promote the dialogue because by promoting the dialogue, it will promote timely resolution of issues. Also, by doing it in a question format and allowing that dialogue to then ferret out recommendations, because at this early juncture in it, I could jump ahead and say, well, these are the specific recommendations I have, but the reality is those recommendations should come after dialogue with other agencies and seeing what the perspective of others are. So that was the basic approach here. Now, the county's approach is really a two-phase approach. One, the first phase is working with the California State Department of Water Resources and the Central Coast Water Authority in order to establish some of the rights to convey excess allocation through the project and into San Luis Obispo County. Phase two, then, is who would be eligible to receive that water, who's the criteria, what agencies, and really the details of what I think the county needs to do is what arrangements and would meet would the subcontractors expect. So I've got those all listed. The biggest subcontractor for State Water Project is Morro Bay. The second largest is the city of Pismo Beach, and the third largest is Oceano out of about 11 subcontractors. So this phase two and who might get the water and those type of detailed issues, I think, is really where we need to focus. There's a little bit of question in phase one as to are contractual waivers required, but I think that if they are, that's more of a technicality. It's really it's how it gets implemented in San Luis Obispo County that is the bigger issue in my mind. And in the couple of meetings that we have had with State Water subcontractors, my input or feedback has been really three issues that I see. One is pricing. What should the price for emergency water go? And in the report, I identified some cost information that the county had compiled. I would be very disappointed if the county had proposed to price it at that cost, because that would be roughly half of what we've been paying for many, many years. And some of the informal feedback that I've gotten from the county is other agencies who may need to buy emergency water recognize the equity issue of State Water subcontractors. So there's at least been that amount of dialogue going. So I think pricing is important. The second one is who would be the recipient of the revenues? There would be some costs to get the water here, and so it's really net revenues. And I think that there is already some guidance in credits that have been established in the State Water contracts, and those relate to transportation capital costs, which is really debt service on pipelines. And so that's the closest tie to investment in infrastructure. And so I've identified that in there just as, again, food for thought for others in the county to say, hey, if we're going to be providing credit back to some of the subcontractors to recognize the investment that the subcontractors have made, then maybe we have some examples in the State Water Project system that we can look at. And so pricing, and then how would revenues be allocated? And the third one is, would subcontractors have a first right to sell? So if there's a buyer that said, we need to buy 1,000 acre feet of state water, would any of the subcontractors have a right to first say, we want to sell 100 acre feet of our water? Or in our case, would we be able to have the right to sell either state water or Lopez water? And so that's the third topic that I've expressed at the meetings is, would subcontractors have a first right to sell? The county has talked about the criteria for recipients, and I gave an example there of health and safety, because there's some discussion that in order to be a recipient, you have to have conservation down to health and safety numbers, which are 50 to 55 gallons per capita per day, roughly. And certainly there are communities that are at that amount. Los Osos is one where their conservation efforts have gotten them down to it. And but we have some of the communities in the Five Cities area where if they were forced to get down to health and safety numbers, that would add to a lot of economic damages, you know, whether it's dead landscaping or whatnot. And so is that a criteria that the county should really establish? Because if the county establishes that kind of criteria, then it becomes a local mandate. And so the food for thought is, well, if a recipient agency is already complying with all the state's mandates on conservation, then should we really have a local mandate to add on top of the state mandates? And in some respects, if it's one of our local cities that's having to make the decision as to whether to buy emergency water, then should that city be able to, obviously they're going to have to identify how much water they might have to buy, and if they're going to buy some water above and beyond what their health and safety needs are, it's going to cost them more. So they're already going to be in that situation of how much conservation are they going to expect versus how much they're willing to pay for some emergency water. So I can see the value on the one hand of establishing a health and safety criteria, But on the other hand, when we think about local mandates on top of state mandates, and when we think about economic damages that, you know, really all the communities are already facing because of the drought, that there are some trade-offs there. So that is it. The timing is that I understand right now that the county is still working with the Department of Water Resources and the Central Coast Water Authority on some final amendments to the agreement with DWR, and that the county has to develop another agreement with the Central Coast Water Authority. It could be soon, but it's a little bit unpredictable right now. And that's the quick summary on that. Again, I wanted to make sure to document a lot of these questions in order to really facilitate future discussions, and be glad to answer any questions.
Karen?
Define soon.
Oh, so it could be November.
That kind of soon.
So yeah, for phase one.
Okay, before July, and we know what the rain was for the whole year.
Yeah, so the county wants to do phase one in 2016 because there's just over 2,000 acre feet of their allocation which will be lost, and no matter what. The way the State Water Project works is that you have limitations on how much you can store.
Yeah.
And so there's, I think it's 2,100 acre feet or so, that will neither be used in our county nor can it be stored. So that will be lost altogether. And so they're hoping to get phase one done so that they can turn that 2,100 acre feet over to CCWA and use it as part of the consideration for phase one work.
Yeah.
Whether that timing works out or not is to be seen, but they're trying to push that. So that was what we might see sooner. In terms of the phase two program and the local criteria and working with all the subcontractors, that's really a 2017 endeavor. I think that all the parties should try to be earnest and get it done in the first 6 months of the year. The general feedback that I'm hearing is that we don't expect any of the local agencies to want to purchase water, emergency program water, in 2017. That what we're hearing is that would be more likely in 2018. But in the event that it gets tighter in the second half of 2017, it would be nice to have this completed in the first half of 2017.
Because my concern is this not be rushed, because this is not going to be a one-time document for an emergency. This is going to be a permanent document.
Yes. For sure, the county is seeking from DWR a multi-year authorization.
Yeah.
And I can't recall if they said 5 years or 10 years of authorization. But I very much believe it would be precedent setting. I think it would be a very good program, but I think it's important that subcontractor rights and all the historical investment that Oceano and the other communities have made, that those need to be taken into consideration in the development of the program.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a mistake is made, we're going to be living with it.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Matt, do you have any questions right at the top? Jen?
No. I just wanted to say I appreciated this document and the policy considerations, and I'm actually very pleased to hear about the fiscal equity argument being accepted by the people.
I'm putting it out there. I'm not sure. Time will tell as to how much different organizations like what I'm putting out there. The idea is in any type of water resource project or program, we're always going to see differing of opinions on issues.
Sure.
It's the old saying of what whiskey is for drinking and water is for fighting. I think it's important that we get this in writing and get it out in front, because by doing so, it gives people the opportunity to read it and to understand it better. When we sit around in rooms and in meetings and we talk about different issues, how well that kind of sinks in is different. And then, of course, if part of our target audience here are the attorneys at the county. Providing them with a written document to provide a preview of some of our thinking is important as well.
And looking at the water reclamation and reuse projects, and, of course, Pismo Beach, I've very passing conversations with some of the engineers involved there. I think that a regional groundwater sustainability project is something that should be seriously looked at.
So I'm gonna jump into that. That's okay. The PowerPoint.
Okay.
But the other five topics, I just kind of wanted to go one by one first through.
Okay.
So I missed, did you say that you sent this whole document to all those people? Or just the state contract?
It's been distributed as far and wide as I can.
The whole thing, okay. Yeah. And then I was wondering, at this point, do we know if the county is planning on reaching out to the agency attorneys, or we haven't heard anything yet?
Have not heard.
Okay.
Lori, did you have any questions
at
this time? Okay. This is my concern, is that when you talk about evaluating, right, you kind of, like, look at people's behaviors. Let's just say people, for example, right? And so one of my concerns is that we'll have communities that will vote to purchase, you know, emergency state water, right? And then they'll get their allotment, or they'll get what they need, right, each year, which they've usually bought into. And then they'll go back to the old habits. And so then we'll go another couple of years with no water, right, no substantial rain, right? Here comes another initiative, another emergency, you know, use. And still they had not built their water system so it sustains their community. And they continue to build and build and build, but they keep falling back to the old same behaviors. I don't want to spend the money on building a sustainable water program. And so we keep having to do the emergency bailout, basically, because, for example, there's communities around us that have not added on any new water in over 50 years. The last time they added any new water sources that are permanent water sources to their portfolios was Lopez. So here we are, Oceano, a poor little community who just keeps pumping our money out, right, because we got to make sure that we have water because we know there's nobody there to grab us. We know that our community doesn't have the funds to run out and buy emergency state water. You know, so we've built our water portfolio to sustain ourselves. I don't know how this has been passed over the years, but every board has been very, very mindful of needing water and doing whatever it took to bring on as many new sources, you know, continuing sources as possible. So how do we capture that? Do we, you know, meanwhile, I don't think the county has taken into consideration that Community X over here has done nothing to sustain themselves except for vote on an emergency state water.
So there's two concepts that I incorporated into the memorandum to address that. One is that to be a recipient, should you have to be able to demonstrate that you are pursuing the development of supplemental sources of water. In the Five Cities area, I think that all the agencies can demonstrate that because of the pursuit of developing the groundwater supplies and reclaimed water. So that's one, but, you know, that's basically a question. It's like a true-false question. Are you earnestly pursuing long-term sustainability through some sort of project development? The second question is on the pricing of the emergency water, because to the extent that there's more charge for the emergency water, then that provides more of an incentive for other agencies to make sure to do the investment in supplemental sources. Because if it's priced super low, then the motivation to develop the supplemental supplies kind of goes away. What I also discussed a little bit is that this balancing between making sure to motivate or using pricing as a motivator with also being reasonable in the drought emergency that we have, because certainly the individuals who represent the other agencies that are in a tighter spot, they didn't create the problem. You know, they inherited a problem. And so if they're diligently pursuing solutions, I think that needs to be taken in consideration. But if you get the second drought and they're coming back and they're asking for emergency water a second time, and their efforts to develop supplemental supplies really didn't pan out, then the second time around maybe there's less of a gracious public policy decisions associated with that. So I think that there's two criteria. You know, are the agencies earnestly pursuing supplemental water? And then second, to what extent should pricing be used in order to, you know, create the incentives? And so both of them I've covered. That obviously then would involve multi-agency dialogue. With multi-agency dialogue, we'll always hear varying opinions on, you know, how firm to be versus how flexible to be. And then in those discussions, hopefully we develop a consensus as to how to address that particular criteria. But certainly it's got to be an important part of the discussions.
Has to.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'm going to skip over water reclamation and reuse because I want to provide the PowerPoint that we have. The other items are relatively quick discussions on Lopez contract amendments. We've been talking at a staff and a technical level. The one that it seems to be most important is to try to establish storage rights at Lopez as opposed to the surplus water model that we worked. Historically, a lot of water supply contracts in California did this year-by-year type of approach. If you didn't use it in a particular year, then the others should be able to use it under the theories of whoever puts the water to beneficial use, evaluated again historically on an annual basis. But today's water environment requires multi-year planning. That means that storage rights are more important. The county has certainly been open to that suggestion. They have hired or gotten a proposal from a company named E-Corp in order to, for the habitat conservation plan that's under development still, the modifications, the operations has to be addressed from an environmental standpoint. So the technical advisory committee at Zone 3 has reviewed the proposal. We provided some edits. We expect that to be on the November Zone 3 advisory committee meeting. So that's the one technical environmental effort that has to be addressed before a contract amendment establishing storage rights can have any further consideration. I mentioned we've also talked about infrastructure capacity of the Zone 3 system, and that was first prompted because of the idea of maybe using Diablo water. The Diablo water is obviously on hold because of PG&E's shutdown efforts, and that story is going to evolve, but at the point in time right now, Diablo water isn't considered to be an emergency option, and as a long-term option, there has to be the discussions with PG&E about how that may or may not work with the closure efforts. So infrastructure capacity has been kind of pushed down. Another topic is, you know, would those state water contractors who also have Lopez water, would we be able to use Lopez Reservoir to store state water? Some of that's happening informally or from an operating standpoint. But again, storage rights is the biggest thing on the contract amendments. And until the HCP has further movement, I wouldn't anticipate. So that one's got a very unpredictable timing. On the HCP efforts overall, we know we're getting close to a draft document after 15 years. I need to mention that the federal agencies, NOAA and NIMS, that they're the ones who determine when a document is a draft document released to the public. So that's not a local decision. And that's part of why it takes so long, is that iteration after iteration by the county and their consultants just results in more questions from NIMS, and it's getting close, but still could be. There could be another board.
10 years from now.
From now, yeah. With respect to the management of the groundwater basin, I obviously had the disclaimer in there that that's continuing litigation, so we have a lot of items that tend to get discussed in closed session because of the litigation, and obviously it's on our closed session calendar periodically. But the efforts that are going on right now, and I'll touch on again in the reclamation discussion, is the modeling of the groundwater basin. And with the settlement money, the SEP money that's being allocated, the settlement money that the sanitation district is paying And then the settlement agreement with the regional board provides for about $221,000 to go forward with groundwater modeling, with the focus of that $221,000 being what is it that we need to know in order to implement a regional reclamation project above and beyond what PISMO has already been studying for a PISMO-only project. So I attached a comment letter that all of our agencies put together, including Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, Oceano, PISMO Beach, and the County of San Luis Obispo. And my understanding is that they've accepted our comments and will modify the settlement for what we suggested. And the key there was that we had provided the regional board and the sanitation district with some scope of work on modeling. They incorporated it into the settlement agreement as is, and we just asked them to consider it as a draft document because there's some additional work that really needs to be done on it in order to create the final scope of work, and they agreed with that. With regard to the priorities on that, then, again, it's the priority associated with what do we need for the groundwater basin. One of the priorities that the county has is SGMA, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, because there's a difference between the adjudicated boundaries of the basin and the boundaries that were determined by the Department of Water Resources. So the county is supportive of the effort because it's going to help address their SGMA requirements. And then the regional board also recognized during these informal discussions that we had that one of the outputs that they would like to see is a regional groundwater monitoring program. At the point in time that reclaimed water is implemented, a reclaimed project has to have a salt and nutrient management plan, and they have to have a monitoring program. But if we develop a regional monitoring program, then that can take the place of a project-specific monitoring program, and that's what the regional board would like to see. So we covered those three points in our cover letter.
Do we get to ask you a question?
Yes.
So what is regional? Is it the entire basin, or is it...
Regional reclamation or...
No, the monitoring.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Sorry.
It's not... you know, what we're going to be focused on in the Five Cities area is the monitoring and NCMA. The basin modeling is also going to cover NMMA, the Nampomo Mesa Management Area, and it's going to cover a little bit of the Santa Maria Valley Air Management Area because a portion of Santa Maria Valley Management Area is in San Luis Obispo County. It's sort of the river's, you know, lower-lying areas near the river, north of the Santa Maria River. So the study area, and I've got a little slide on that as well, is going to cover basically the basin within San Luis Obispo County.
And what do they plan on budgeting? What's the fiscal impact to that going to be, to that monitoring? I'll go back and ask you what the bottom line on the characterization is later, but what are they proposing?
It's here somewhere.
The fiscal impact on just the monitoring.
So that answer, we don't know that answer. The point is that during the development of the model, how do we develop the base information and the modeling information that then directly provides recommendations on monitoring? So that's going to be an outcome of the work effort.
So will it be like hot spots where they'll closely monitor hotter, lower levels in the basin or
Yes, and sure. One of the regional board's concerns, for example, is that in agricultural areas, depending on what level of nitrates are there, they want to see different water quality evaluations in there. Now, we, from a NCMA standpoint, might say, well, that's a good component of a modeling program, but that doesn't have to do with us. So who's going to pay for that water quality testing in order to do that particular type of monitoring? Point here is that the work effort should be able to then identify if we have hot spots that need to be monitored more closely, or obviously there's always a monitoring of the overall groundwater levels. Mm-hmm. But are there any specific areas concerned, like the interface between the Mesa and Northern Cities management area? Does there need to be some specific monitoring in there? The Regional Water Quality Control Board is going to want to see water quality monitoring associated with a reclaimed water project. So the point is that this work effort then will start to define how do we develop a monitoring program? What would the cost be?
So, and it, have they come up with a budget on the characterization?
So on the modeling overall, there's about $750,000 secured, including the $221,000. There's $250,000 that's been designated through Zone 3, $250,000 through the Flood Control District. We've obtained grants through Prop 84 of about $20,000. So all combined, that's almost $750,000. And from the numbers that I've seen, that seems to be the rough approximation of what the work effort's going to be.
Because, you know, with that that woman who came and spoke, Dr. Knight, you know, they had given a bid for the Paso Robles Basin, what it would cost to have that basin characterized. And it was well over about $2.5 million. I mean, I think it's worth every penny to know what's underneath you. But, you know, they passed on it. So,
yeah, they didn't. There's not a funding source to do that up in the Paso Basin.
Not.
And that dollar amount doesn't shock me for the Paso Basin, given the size of the basin and the fact that it is a much more complex basin than what we're looking at down here.
Okay. So you think that we're right about in the right range, about 750?
Yeah, and ultimately it's developing a scope of work, getting out there and getting the RFPs out there, you know, working with the consultants, and then refining the scope of work to make sure to live within the budget.
Okay. Thanks.
I should mention that the policy support from Zone 3 was first predicated on a one-third, one-third, one-third cost sharing between the county, NCMA, and NMMA. The Mesa has yet to provide any commitments there, so that will have to go back to Zone 3 to see whether or not the policymakers still support it. The county certainly does. They want to see the work effort move forward, and then there's the hope that the Mesa will get on board sooner as opposed to later, but the $221,000 from the SEP program is certainly important money to help support reclaimed water, and that's why staff of the various agencies have gotten behind it.
Well, let's hope they see the light.
Fifth topic that I've had, fourth for right now, is the funding alternatives for OCSD's capital improvement program. And the important point to couple points to make there is that while we have been able to establish a balanced budget here at OCSD and we've implemented drought-related water conservation rates and the community is doing a great job of conserving water, and those numbers are all coming in pretty, revenues are coming in pretty close to what we were predicting. What we still have in front of us is the need to do upgrades to some of that outdated infrastructure. And certainly CHC's efforts on some of the line replacements is a welcome benefit to the community. The grants from Prop 84 and Prop 1 on the disadvantaged community money is going to help us move forward with soft costs on engineering to get the CIP program together. I imagine we're going to have to budget some soft costs as well, but even in the best strategies of getting some grants for the infrastructure program and some low interest rate loans, the best fiscal strategies there are still going to have a local cost, a community, a CSD cost associated with it. And so analysis is going to have to be to what extent are our development fees going to help cover some of those costs, and to what extent are we going to have to develop other local revenues. Questions are, is an assessment approach, is it going to be a special tax approach, is it going to be rates and charges? If it's rates and charges, is it base rate, is it tiered rates? So those are the different types of variables that we're going to be working with. To what extent can we afford a CIP program? Because if there's a need that's established that's beyond what the board thinks is, you know, could be supported through rate increases, then do we need to take a phasing approach on that CIP program in order to tackle higher priorities up front and then medium and lower priorities down the road? So I see that getting into that revenue analysis in a CIP program is going to be part of our 2017 work efforts. And then the last one, real quickly, is just the 2017 water use strategies. And I basically wrote what I'm predicting a little bit, and that is that the weather predictions right now aren't looking good for a lot of rain. It's going to be still a wait-and-see type of thing. The watershed is obviously still very dry, so even with some good rainfall, how much inflow into Lopez is there going to be is a big question mark. And because Lopez is drawing down and the water quality is getting pretty bad, our ability to store in Lopez is declining. With state water drought buffer, if we have some decent delivery percentages there, then the strategy might switch to storing state water, drawing Lopez, and doing some groundwater pumping, because we're at a point in time where you know, we have to start using our Lopez allotment. Otherwise,
we have to start using our groundwater
allotment. Yeah, otherwise it's going to get stranded. So the storage strategy would seem to be moving away from storing at Lopez and moving to storing on the state water system, and utilizing Lopez and groundwater pumping next year. Depending on the state water delivery percentages, there's always a possibility we can maximize storage in state water and then still have water that we can deliver locally. And if that's the case, then we're going to want to deliver that state water locally to preserve whatever we have at Lopez or preserve the groundwater. So a little bit of it's going to have to be wait and see to see what the winter is like and wait and see what the state water delivery percentages is like. But the basic idea of moving a storage, because storage is important, right? If you're in a drought, you want to have water in storage, and moving that storage strategy from Lopez to the state water system seems to make a lot of sense since Lopez is drawing down and water quality is getting pretty poor.
But isn't there a limit on how long you can store in the state system?
The condition is that once San Luis Reservoir spills, then all stored water spills first.
Right.
So there's always good news and bad news with that, because the bad news is, you just lost your storage, but the good news is there's been sufficient rain that the reservoirs are spilling. So.
Well, when we get to that point, then we'll worry about that.
That at that point in time, yeah.
Yeah. But as long as we have the resource, the water, the sources, access to the sources, because we've bought into that, we really need a place to store. So is Lopez our only option? And if we go state, then it would be San Luis Reservoir?
That's right. San Luis Reservoir is our storage facility for state water.
Right. And that's the closest there is as far as storing?
Yeah, and it's actually in a good location because of its proximity to the coastal aqueduct. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I attended a meeting today with led by WSC and with representatives of some of the other agencies, and I am going to go through this. I'll skip through some of the slides really quickly because this itself was about an hour and a half discussion, so I want to just touch on the highlights. But the point here is that our agencies are all meeting periodically and getting updates from the consultants on what their work efforts have been. And so we're going to cover some of the key next steps. And also in December, they're planning on a tour of up in Monterey County, one of the systems up there.
Great.
So I'll make sure to contact everybody about that time. And when the election rolls around, whoever the new board members are going to be, I'll make sure to outreach to them as well on that tour.
I think you should have some people from the public who want to go.
Usually they are. These kind of tours are usually open for people who are interested in the public to attend as well. Sometimes public members have to work out their own transportation because agency's restrictions in the cars that, you know, what we're allowed to transport. But we did, like, for a couple of the projects that I've worked on before, we've done tours out of the area, and public have participated in those tours. So we did introductions. What this identifies is a phasing approach that's currently being discussed. And the important takeaway here is that we've gotten to a point where this discussion of should there be two separate projects or should it be a combined project, is that it certainly seems like the momentum behind a combined project is very strong. It's hard for me to imagine the feasibility or the cost effectiveness of separate projects. But the challenge of bringing two, you know, in two projects, what I mean by that is reclaimed water for the flows out of the Pismo plant, as well as reclaimed water for the flows out of South County Sands plants. And the reason why they've sketched out a two-phase approach is really to recognize that the Sand District has some other work that they have to do, you know, the redundancy project. And there's some continuing evaluations of how would upgrades to their treatment processes work with the end game being reclaimed water. So the two-phase approach is recognizing that Pismo's flows right now are sort of are ready to go into the reclaimed process, but the Sand District's flows aren't. So in this situation, they're seeing that as maybe as soon as mid-2019, phase one construction might be able to be started, and that would be, again, associated with the Pismo effort. I like this approach because this and on other issues, it shows the efforts of starting to coordinate, and it's sort of a broad brush analysis. It may be that we find ourselves in a couple of years that the phasing approach just works into doing the whole project at one time. But I like what WSC has done by identifying the fact that we have two different challenges associated with two different plants. Maybe there needs to be a phasing approach. Ideally, it gets all done at one time. The other thing, though, is that there's phasing associated with the two different entities, Pismo and Sand District, but then there's also a potential of phasing of what kind of project we're talking about. So there's indirect potable reuse and there's direct potable reuse. And there is, in order to do direct potable reuse, there's a little bit more technology involved. And so whether phase two would involve higher treatment levels, again, is something that's going to be worked on. But the general idea that we are getting on the same page in terms of the big picture is important, because then it facilitates being able to address these details as we go down the road.
Let me ask you another question.
Okay.
Did you say 2019 they would be ready for phase one?
Mid-2019 is what they, that's the, and so here's, that is technically possible. That was part of what WSC was emphasizing from a technical standpoint. The ability to get all of the local agency decisions lined up and getting all the funding in place, those non-technical issues tend to be the bigger challenges, because the devil's in the details. So what type of interagencies agreements are necessary, what kind of governance decision-making structures are necessary, and those kind of things can sometimes take longer timetables than the technical work that our consultants are working on. So this is certainly a scenario that's technically possible, but whether or not all the other ducks get lined up in time is a different question.
So next time you meet with WSC, ask them if it's possible to consider a fast-track approach. Because, look, people are running out of water here.
Yeah.
And to wait 4 years.
I think the important point there, President Lucy, is this cannot be seen as being a drought emergency project. This is a long-term groundwater reliability project.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, so doing it in a timely manner is important, but it's not going to alleviate, you know, the emergency drought that people are facing right now.
I don't think it'll alleviate it. I don't think it'll produce enough to alleviate it. But 4 years, I just think that's a long time.
So, well, we're in mid-2016 right now. They're showing a mid-2019 to initiate construction. That's 3 years. With the environmental efforts, the financing, interagency agreements, I think that the schedule that they're showing here is realistically about as quick as it possibly can get done. The concern is that it could take longer. How well can we all get on the same page in terms of the details? That's going to be the issue in order to be able to achieve this schedule as it's laid out. Oh, so this was the little graphic here on City of Pismo Beach has been taking the lead, and at some point there's going to have to be handed off to the regional approach. What they're looking at right now in the near term to help move things forward is generally portrayed here. So the idea is Pismo Beach is right there in the middle. They're taking the lead. Some of the SEP and that Supplemental Environmental Program funds are going to come in, and that's going to support the additional groundwater evaluations that are going to have to be done. So that's been good news. And then from the Sand District, what they're looking for, and Gerhardt was cautious to make any commitments, but looking to Pismo Beach to expand their EIR efforts to encompass the regional approach, including Sand District flows. So that additional cost, Pismo Beach is going to ask the Sand District to consider paying for, and that will have to be on the Sand District's agenda in the future. And, of course, Gerhardt is concerned about what that price tag might be. But because Pismo Beach already has an EIR that's underway and they have some funding to add to it for the regional approach, is seemingly the most cost-effective approach. From Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceano, then, well, one is there would have to be support at the Sand District on the Sand District's role. And then they're looking at the three agencies individually to consider letters of intent. And letters of intent, there's some bullet points that I'll go through in there. But basically, those are, you know, collaboration without long-term formal commitments. But just to start getting everybody on the same page. And I have had the opportunity to review the initial drafts that WSC had come up with on bullet points. I gave them feedback, and I will say that the feedback that I've provided was well received. So in terms of these letters of intent, and this will be on a subsequent board agenda specifically, so key statements, acknowledging shared interest. This agree to participate in development of an NCMA basin level response plan. And this is one of the points that I gave them specific feedback on, and that is that if we're looking to develop a basin management plan that's in greater detail than what we already have addressed through the stipulations in the gentleman's agreement, my concern was to make that a requirement before you implement reclaimed water is taking a complex issue and inserting another complex issue into the middle of it. And the idea is that can delay. So I think it's very important that as reclaimed water is being developed, that we're all studying how does this affect our mutual management of the basin. Those particular issues, because they relate to the adjudication, the litigation, the stipulations, are really going to be subjects discussed first in closed session. But the point is, we need to work on those, but we don't want those to delay the development of reclaimed water. Jeff Seitel did a nice job of expressing that, is that it can't be a condition precedent to the development of reclaimed water. So again, that was, to me, that was some optimism that everybody's talking and we're hearing what each other is saying and we're being responsive. Support the expansion of the groundwater model, support the expansion of the EIR. So all this stuff would have to happen before this letter of intent different governing boards will consider before a sand district is asked to take any formal action. Because obviously at the sand district, they're going to want to see that AG and Grover and Oceano support it. I acknowledge that we'll have to think about a governance structure and how is the decision-making going to work for a regional reclaimed water project. Statement that non-reimbursed project costs will be shared in a portion based on benefits. And this might actually be falling away. This concept came up because the SEP money that's coming from the regional board, if you don't follow through and do what you promised to the regional board, then they're not going to give you the money at the end of the day. And so if PISMO was going down the path of using the SCP money for a bunch of work and then they lost out on it, then they're eating the whole $221,000. So they have this position that, well, gosh, there should be risk sharing by all the agencies on that. And at a staff level, we recognize that. But it also looks that now with the augmentation of the funding from Zone 3 and from the Flood Control District, if the county takes the lead on the efforts, then this might fall away by the wayside and not be as much of a risk issue. But it was specifically looking at the SEP monies and risks associated with, essentially, if there's non-performance. And that's why if we have an agreement on that risk, we're all motivated to make sure it gets done on time. So those are the key elements of the letter intent. Again, starting to set a path that we all see as being a common path, but not any long-term commitments, because long-term commitments would have to be subsequent work efforts. In terms of the groundwater model, I touched on this a little bit. This is a nice illustration. First, to focus in on the boundaries, characterization, using the SCP money for RGSP scenarios, which is the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project scenarios, and then moving into Zone 3 for safe yield analysis and flood control money into some of the seawater intrusion. It's a real conceptual approach to the groundwater modeling. Details, again, are going to have to be worked through in scope of work. There's some basic timelines put in there, but the first meeting with the county is scheduled for the first week of November, so certainly all the agencies are motivated to get moving on this work effort.
Well, I think I ripped pocket slides. That's not it.
Oh, that is it. So,
wow.
Yes, we have. I think that the good news, again, out of the discussions on the regional plant, when your board supported the PISMOS project, it was a 4-1 vote. Director Guerrero was concerned about what did it mean in terms of the sanitation district. I think we've all sort of had that sort of common concern about how is the one going to relate to the other one. And the good news right now is that all of the agencies seem to be focused on how do we accomplish a single regional project. And if a phasing approach is necessary in order to do that, then let's figure out the phasing so we can get it done.
All right.
And it's still my concern. But
yes.
Because I think that's the appropriate approach. You go back to 2012 when we had the recycled water forum at the sanitation plant. Unfortunately, the recycling discussion got derailed for quite a while until recently, getting resistance from our own board with comments like, we're not in the water business. Well, we are in the water business, and whether it's recycled water or whether it's groundwater or whatever. And so anyway, I'm glad that we're having this discussion. Pop, I really applaud the efforts here in this document and the ideas that are highlighted. I don't know as we go forward what direction that I would deem appropriate. It seems like it's a pretty good roadmap. This obviously is a living document, but I think the idea was when we started this discussion between the two of us that to help for the incoming board frame some of the important issues and provide a document that would be and a discussion that would be foundational for their understanding as they come in and help
as we pass the baton to whomever that board is going to be, help identify what the baton is, really.
Yeah.
And so, because we're in a better spot than we were 2 years ago or 4 years ago or 6 years ago.
And one of the topics I addressed in the memorandum that we really didn't discuss at the meeting today, because it's, you know, one of those details we're going to have to address, is what is the cost-sharing allocation going to be?
Sure.
Because the discussion has to go from what are the costs that are appropriate to charge through the wastewater side versus what are the costs that are appropriate to charge through the water side. Because from a water perspective, Oceano is in good shape, and it all begs the question of why would Oceano need to invest in more water resources?
Saltwater intrusion.
Yeah, and from a so, you know, certainly there's benefits of Oceano associated with a healthier groundwater basin, but to what extent can some of that be covered through the treatment processes at the wastewater side? Because Oceano, right, if there's costs that are incurred through the sanitation district, then Oceano's customers are going to be helping to pay for those costs.
Sure.
And I always like to bring up the solid waste analogy, because in our garbage bills every month, we pay for some of the costs associated with recycling. And that's been a longstanding public policy decision in many areas throughout the state. And does that analogy also hold true then for water recycling projects, that you have a waste stream that comes into a wastewater treatment plant, and there's a certain responsibility there to clean it up and make sure that it's ready for reuse, or maybe get it back into the basin, and then the water side, there should be some cost on the water side. It's also, I think our position might be to base water cost on actual pumping, because we're tending to pump a much smaller percentage of our groundwater allocation than some of the other agencies. But again, that's details to be worked on.
Right.
The start is how much do you allocate on the wastewater side, how much do you allocate on the water side, and then how do you, on the water side, come up with the cost sharing between the different agencies.
At some point, I would like to see Oceano stop, I guess, start pumping our groundwater allocation. We pay for it. We've, you know, been supporting the litigation for the adjudication forever. And it's our right, that 900 acre feet, as stated in the contracts. But still, you know, I think that we've been browbeat down to not pump because we do have other sources of water, but it's costing us. So each year it costs Oceano 900 acre feet of water.
Well, and I agree, especially as the drought extends, to show that groundwater pumping is still an integral part of our water resource strategies as a drought proceeds is important.
Right.
And that, again, is part of, I think, an important 2017 strategy, storing state water, using some Lopez water, pumping groundwater. 2017 is looking like it could be very well the year that is an important year to do some groundwater pumping.
Well,
I think as a board member, I was hoping that other entities in the area would develop their water system. And us pulling back, I was really hoping that they would step up to the plate and bring on more sources, but, you know, hope's in a box.
Well, your part six, the water use strategies, the point is well taken to basically, it's kind of get that water while we can while maintaining our groundwater and state supplies. And, yep. And so I think that as far as direction, I can get behind those particular recommendations for sure.
Do you want any action on that part of it?
No, I like the support. I don't think the action. Usually what source of water we're drawing from tends to be
a staff
decision. The dialogue with your board and expressing what our inclinations are and that we're all on the same page is, I think, what's important right now.
I just wanted to thank you for that document. It's very thorough and informative. Summarizes it all very well. I would have loved to have had that. when I first started. That's great. And I really appreciate the questions that you bring up and the things that are coming in the future. They're going to be good questions to contemplate together. Thank you.
I would think that we really need to focus on getting the water out of Lopez next year.
Pardon me, that we do?
We need to get our water out of Lopez next year, because if it doesn't rain, there won't be a Lopez Lake.
Yeah, so right now, so our annual allocation is 303 acre feet, and Tony just submitted the preliminary numbers for next year, which is we are looking at 40 acre feet a month or 480 acre feet for the year, which is about half of what we have at Lopez, with the idea being use a two-year strategy to draw it down.
But if it doesn't rain, is there going to be 2 years in Lopez?
Yes, and that's about what there's going to be.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a little bit of inflow every year, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. At this point, we'll open it up for public comment. Tacker.
Good evening again. I am Julie Tacker, and I think my largest concern, and it sounds like you share it to a point, is that the equity of Oceano in the entire scheme of water, and let me start where Pavo kind of left off and go backwards. The settlement agreement. I submitted a comment letter to the water board. I copied the South County Sanitation District. The NCMA did not copy the sanitation district. I think it would have been a good discussion at the sanitation district level. I really think that the whole settlement should have been discussed in open session, because there was a flood and the settlement doesn't, any of the monies, the SCPs, does not mitigate flood. And it was Oceano that had sewage in the streets and sewage in the homes and sewage in the businesses, and there's no mitigation from this money to armor that plant from flood. I think there is a typo in your policy page 33 of 36, the very last date, Mr. Ogren. The project price for the modeling. In the document that went to the water board, the modeling was $675,000. Mr. Ogren's talking about $750,000. I'd like to know what changed that. There's a schedule for the modeling project. Certainly the sanitation district has no control over the NCMA's schedule. What I really don't like is that you're subsidizing Pismo Beach in any way. And the three communities that are the sanitation district, this is your money. This is your ratepayers' money that's going towards Pismo. And whether or not you actually end up with a regional project is yet to be determined. So Pismo Beach is not contributing on the order that you are through the sanitation district settlement. I don't really think I ever want to see Oceano pay for recycled water. Your contribution in the form of grants due to your grant eligibility is probably enough. You have a very healthy portfolio. And then when you speak, if you'll allow, about portfolios, Ms. Lucy, your characterization about other communities not developing their portfolio, I think is a little bit unfair. With the city of Arroyo Grande, I think that's who you're referencing.
No, I'm not, but
Okay, well, let's just, I will take Arroyo Grande as an example. Arroyo Grande has done a phenomenal job at conservation. Conservation is a new source of water, and Oceano has yet to really tap into that. One concern I do have for Arroyo Grande is the measure E16, in that it has no price tag for those voters. Arroyo Grande voters are being told that they may incur increased water rates.
Okay.
May incur.
Ms. Tucker, I'm going to stop you on that note, okay, because what's happening in AG has, it's not relevant to what we're discussing right here.
Well, it is, in that this is about selling water, state water, to Arroyo Grande. It is.
Yeah.
And I'll just.
Oceana, though, bought state water, so what they choose to do with their state
water. Are you just cutting me off, or do you want to have
a
dialogue?
Well, you're a
minute and a half over. Fine.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there anybody else who'd like to speak on public comment? Hearing none, I'll close the floor to public comment right now.
Right.
Do we want to?
I think we should just direct staff to proceed with this WISE management plan that they've come up with for the 2017 water resources, and to continue to monitor the situation as related to the other six, I think it's six, this is a total of seven, yeah, the other six items, and to report to the board, continue to communicate with the board, and to develop these ideas that are contained herein.
Do I hear a second?
Is that a motion?
It is, I guess.
Second. If it's a motion, I'll sure second it.
Okay. Nobody wants to make any more comments. Thank you so much for this document.
Thank you.
It really is very well.
It's very helpful.
Together.
I hope that it's helpful to the oncoming board.
I did enjoy
as
reading
well.
It. In fact, I read it three times.
Oh, you're.
So you do a roll call vote. I know it's fiscally.
Director Guerrero.
Yes.
Vice President White.
Yes.
Director Angelo.
Yes.
Director Blackburn.
Yes.
President Lucy.
Yes. Thank
three
you.
Times you're glutton to punishment. Yeah. Twice.
All right. Thank you, Pablo. All right. Utility items.
Nothing.
Hearing items. Did anybody write to us this month? Did anybody write to us?
Yes.
Any written communications?
Well, we did. Okay, so
microphone on written communications, including is November 3rd at 6 p.m. here at the OCSD boardroom.
Okay.
The county will come out and have a public discussion on the Front Street Revitalization Project.
6 to 8 p.m.
What day is that again?
The 3rd.
November 3rd.
Thursday, okay. November 3rd.
Excellent.
To bring their checkbook.
Yep. One quick thing. This document, maybe it could have its own tab on the website so that it's easy to find.
Yeah.
Which document are you?
8B. Are you already moved on, Pablo?
Yeah, we're on. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe you can have a water policy board discussion.
So yeah, we'll create a new page.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Sure.
And you know, get rid of them clouds.
And on the website, I looked at it a couple of weeks ago. It's got some stuff that's real old. The Friday reports from 5 years ago. And
we need some web work.
We do.
Some hard.
Cody, how's your
work.
Web skills?
Okay. Did you say somebody wrote to us?
That was item 11, yeah. Now we can go on to item 14, future agenda.
Could I say a little bit more on item 11?
Yes.
Because I think it's really important that the community know that there's a consideration either closing Front Street, or not, wait a minute, I've got it wrong again.
Closing Beach.
Closing Beach or 17th. Mm-hmm. And the decisions can be made at that time which of those two roads to close. And there's also some other issues that I think the community really needs to come to this meeting and find out about what's going to go on.
That's right.
Because depending on how you look at it, it's going to really improve the flow of traffic, or it's going to really impede the flow of traffic through the community.
Okay.
And I'd like to see lots of people there to have their feelings.
And what time was that meeting again, Pablo?
6 p.m.
6 p.m. Oceana Revitalization, 11-3, November 3rd.
Yep.
Okay. Any closed session items? Nothing. Future agenda items? No future?
Yes,
no.
There is.
No future.
Yes, there is a future, President Lucy.
Oh, my gosh.
I hope. But the recommendations are cancellation of three regular meetings, the second meeting in October, the second meeting in November, the second meeting in December. The reason why is because board members are going to be missing in the second meeting in October anyhow. And then November and December, of course, will conflict with Thanksgiving and Christmas.
I make a motion that we
probably want to take public comment on that one first.
Oh, sorry, forgot about that.
Case.
So we'll take public comment on 14, postponing three future meetings, October 26th, November 23rd, and December 28th.
That exact day.
26th, 23rd, and 28th.
Okay.
I make a motion that we approve the cancellation of the regular meetings of October 26th, November 23rd, and December 28th, 2016.
Okay, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. No.
Opposed? Abstained? Passes.
4-1.
Okay. Future hearing.
She's going to be here on her own. Enjoy yourself.
That's it. Future hearing items. No future? Okay.
No.
Adjourn. I'll entertain a motion.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Good night.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
Yes.
I made it.
Hit the hammer. We're adjourned.
She wants her check.